This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashrin Johan. There seems to be quite a lot of noise coming from UMNO over the past week or so, from statutory declarations to the continuous faction war that seems to be brewing and eating the party up from the inside out. So, what's up with UMNO this week? Well, joining me on the show to help me unpack that is O.A. Sun, a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Welcome to the show, O.A. Sun. Now, 3 days ago, UMNO Secretary General Ahmad Mazlan, he acknowledged that there was a movement to collect statutory declarations, also known as SDs, from MPs on the formation of a new government. Now, firstly, what can you tell us about the legitimacy of these SDs? And are there actual efforts from UMNO to overthrow the current Perikatan National Government?
Well, the statutory declarations, as the name suggests, they are basically the documents with legal effects. And in this case, members of parliament would make declarations in those statements saying, for example, they support a certain person or certain leader to be the prime minister, and right, these documents are then witnessed by a certain commissioner of oath, and it gives a sort of legal declarations. But of course, well, these declarations are valid at the time they are made, right? So let's say you are saying that you support Muhyiddin on a Monday. Well, it is valid on that particular instance.
Right.
But if you go on another day, let's say it's Wednesday, you might change your mind and now support, let's say, Anwar and so on.
Right.
So statutory declarations would have to be used rather fast if they were going to have legal effects, because the person making those SDs, so-called, could always change their mind legally afterwards. So nowadays, it has become a very fashionable way of declaring your political allegiance. I think primarily because over the last year and a half or so, primarily during the Sheraton move, we have seen people, for example, well, this time it was from Bersatu, right? They were also making various statutory declarations, trying to form government with, for example, UMNO and PAS and so on. So since then, SDs have become indeed one way to sort of create what here would be called a political win, to sort of create a kind of atmosphere that a certain political leader is getting a lot of support and he is poised to become the next prime minister and so on. With the hope that, well, other MPs who are not yet on the bandwagon would indeed jump on the bandwagon. So politics nowadays, it's a lot about creating impressions as well, such that these impressions would indeed create more momentum for you to go forward as you try to clinch the prime ministership.
Right. So do you think that whatever that Ahmad Mazlan came out and acknowledged about these SDs, do you think that, as you mentioned, they are just another instance of an attempt to create political wind? Or do you think that this time that it's an actual legitimate SD and like legal actions are going to be taken? Do we even know who the MPs that signed the SD are?
Well, nowadays in Malaysia, you really have to play, especially in the political arena, in this rather gray zone of half-truths, of various, as we say, impressions and political wins and so on. I think there are genuine efforts to get MPs to sign the SDs in support of this and that leader. For example, I think the names which pop up would be Hishamuddin or Anwar and so on. And well, it depends on how much or to what extent they could actually gather these signatures. And getting just the signatures from the UMNO MPs would not be enough, because to form a government, you need a parliamentary majority, right? Mm-hmm. And UMNO has only, I think, altogether around 38 members. You would also at the same time have to get SDs from various other MPs from other parties. So in that sense, I think Anwar may have an upper hand, in the sense that, well, he would, I would presume, to have the SDs of all these Pakatan MPs, right?
Right.
And that amounts to, let's say, around 70-something, 80 seats. And if he can get more UMNO MPs to sign for him, I mean, to sign SDs for him, then, well, he could scrap together a parliamentary majority. As to Hisham's alleged attempt to also gather SDs, well, I wonder how he could gather also, you know, those SDs from the other side, namely the Pakatan Harapan side.
My next query then, Ehsan, is I'm wondering if this is, instead of actually causing significant seismic shifting sort of effect to our political landscape, is this more of another instance that just highlights the growing divisions within UMNO? Because yesterday, Padang Rengas MP Nazri Abdul Aziz, who is also from UMNO, he openly claimed that, you know, 25 out of BN's 42 MPs have lost confidence in Chairperson Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, and that he trusts Hishamuddin over Zahid. So what can you tell us about this?
Well, of course, there have always been divisions within the UMNO. UMNO, it's perhaps in the modern sense, the mother of all Malay politics. You see, all the other Malay-dominated parties, they were essentially splinters from UMNO. And you see PAS, you see PKR, you see Bersatu and so on. The backbones of these parties, they were originally from UMNO. Of course, PAS evolved a lot since then. Mm-hmm. But even like Anwar was formerly deputy president of UMNO, right? So from time to time, the various Malay leaders within UMNO, they will have different, number one, ideological leanings. And number two, of course, shall we say, more opportunistic political leanings, right? In UMNO right now, you could see at least three different factions. There's a mainstream elected party leadership factions with Zahid and his close associate, the former Prime Minister Najib, and so on. And then, these are the so-called court clusters, because a lot of them would have cases pending in the court. And then you have the so-called cabinet clusters, right? Those who were appointed into the Muhyiddin cabinet. Now, this cluster are not totally supporting Muhyiddin as well, because they have an overlap with the third cluster, namely, those who were trying to put themselves forward, this is the third cluster, to be also potential candidates for prime minister. I think over the last few months, there were various names being pop up. There were even Khairi and then Tengku Razali, right? And then now it seems like this third cluster is rallying around Hisham, for example. Mainly two things. Number one is to make sure, even if this government were to continue, UMNO would be in the driver's seat instead of Bersatu, right? Instead of Bersatu dictating everything within the coalition, UMNO would be the one doing so.
Right.
And number two, if UMNO were to do so, then, of course, the UMNO leader who is commanding UMNO should then be prime minister. So it's like a two-step process, right? UMNO has to take charge, and then the person who is taking charge of UMNO should then be a prime minister. So that's why you see, number one, UMNO is actually very coy about actually withdrawing support from the current government. It has claimed so since, if I remember correctly, at least, let's say, July of last year. It's almost a year now that it is no longer supporting this government, but somehow it is still in this government because ideally for AMNO, this government will still be around, just that AMNO is taking charge. So that's the first step, right? Yep. And then the second step is, of course, the real power struggle within AMNO. Assuming the first step is achieved, AMNO is in charge, then, well, who is now in charge of AMNO and therefore the prime minister of the day, right? Mm. So that's why a lot of these insinuations are made against Zahid, that he has cases and therefore should not be prime minister, even if AMNO is in charge and so on. Because after Sheraton move, everybody would think they are potential prime ministerial candidates. Because, you know, if we recall during Sheraton move, who would imagine Muhyiddin Yassin would be appointed prime minister, right?
That's right.
Every day during that very fateful week, we were wondering whether Dr. Mahathir will come back to be prime minister, or does Anwar have the requisite, statutory decorations and so on. And then suddenly a dark horse candidate in a Sunday afternoon around 4:30 come out to be the prime minister, right?
Right.
So after that, I think it emboldens many people such that they are very conspicuous in putting themselves forward.
And Isan, with that in mind, right, this idea mm-hmm. that post-Lanka Sheraton, a lot of MPs, regardless of which party you're from, you would have the sort of belief now that, oh, looks like anybody can become prime minister if we play our cards right. So with mm-hmm. that in mind, do you think that AMNO will have a legitimate tough time of deciding who will be their prime minister candidate at the next elections, whenever that happens, right? I'm curious, you know, what are the chances of Hishamuddin actually becoming a Barisan Nasional's prime minister candidate? And do we anticipate an implosion within AMNO? Or will everyone ultimately, you know, just toe the party line, as they call it, like AMNO always does?
Well, Hishamuddin is the ideal candidate, but also a problematic candidate in the sense that, he has comparatively liberal views, very westernized upbringings and so on. It would, of course, bring somewhat refreshing the outlook to AMNO, a bit like, for example, his cousin Najib in the early days, right? Mm-hmm. Western educator, very suave and, talking in the international stage and so on. But then the problem is, unlike Najib, Hisham perhaps enjoys less of a grassroots support as compared to many other senior leaders in the party. Whether we like it or not, AMNO is actually quite a democratic party because it has very thorough party elections. And even its current catfight with Bersatu, it's to a large extent a reflection of the sentiments at the grassroots, because when Bersatu is taking charge of the coalition now, then of course at the grassroots level, at the district levels, for example, a lot of political resources are channeled towards Bersatu instead of AMNO. So there's a genuine grassroots sort of outrage against Bersatu, and the party senior leadership is, in a sense, reflecting that. To what extent, for example, Hisham would catch this sort of grassroots sentiments right. and ride on these sentiments is still left to be seen, because it would appear that, for example, he is a member of the cabinet and he does not appear to be following the party's very strong stance against Bersatu very much. but he did not bother even to contest in the party's election after the 2018 defeat in the election, in the general election, right? Mm-hmm. So this does not reflect very well upon him when it comes to you know, the all important UMNO grassroots.
All right. On that note, we do need to go for a very quick break. I'm speaking with Oh A San, a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, about the developments at UMNO over the past week or so. We'll be back with more on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Oh A San, a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. And we're talking about the ongoing developments at UMNO over the past week or so. Now, Isan, in our ever-changing political landscape, right, one of the relationships that seem somewhat fluid as well is that of PKR and UMNO. We know that since last year, PKR somewhat has shifted their stance and narrative about UMNO, and it seems like the two parties were starting to cozy up to one another. But later, UMNO came out and said, you know, no Anwar, no DAP. But yesterday, it was brought up again by Nazri, and he said in October, you know, Ahmad Zahid gave misleading information to the YDPA that BNMPs supported PKR President Anwar Ibrahim as the Prime Minister. And he also said that, I trust Hishamuddin to tell the truth that we don't support Anwar or DAP. Has communications between Anwar and Zahid soured relationships within UMNO itself?
Well, we are now having a very fragmented political landscape in this mm-hmm. country, right? So the important thing for any aspiring prime ministerial candidate would be to put together a coalition which would command a parliamentary majority. We see similar things are happening in other parliamentary democracies around the world. The most recent example perhaps being Israel, where you saw parties from the extreme right and from the far left coming together, all eight of them, to form a coalition government with a razor-thin parliamentary majority, right? Mm-hmm. So in the Malaysians' instance, you would see the three main parties, each with around 40 seats. They are, for example, the PKR, UMNO, and DAP, right?
That's right.
So if these three parties come together, they will command approximately, let's say, around 115 to 120 parliamentary seats, which would be enough for them to form a government. And therefore, it is only natural that they would talk to each other. You know, these three parties, A, B, and C, sometimes A talk to B, sometimes B talk to C, C talk to A, and so on, right? So I think that is not surprising. In the late 1990s, Zahid Hamidi was actually Anwar's chief henchman, right? He, on behalf of Anwar, was the first to launch an attack on Dr. Mahathir and so on. So they were very close allies back then. It is not surprising that they will still talk to each other, especially when in combination they command around, let's say, 75 seats in parliament. Of course, some other ambitious candidates, prime ministerial candidates, or people who see themselves as prime ministerial materials within UMNO would not be happy about that. We are talking about people such as, well, in this case, Hisham, mm. and of course, Nasri, and so on.
Right.
But Nasri, even Nasri himself, was at one point, again in the 1990s, aligned to Anwar, right?
That's right.
So you see all these shifting coalitions with the main aim of propping up one or another potential prime ministerial candidates. Within UMNO, there's some form of discontent against the leadership. Number one, for them to so blatantly so-called go against the government, but also because, well, since they're so blatantly going against the government, they also would not pull the party out of the government. this sort of very ambiguous stand of UMNO would give rise to a lot of hopes to people that perhaps he could clinch the party's leadership, perhaps not in the formal form of party elections, but simply by having most of the party MPs declaring their support for him. So I would summarize it at all this... actually, no hard feelings. It's not as if all these people have real ideological differences, you know. It's right. not as if, let's say, Hisham would like to develop this country or bring this country to a different direction as, let's say, Zahid Hamidi or Anwar Ibrahim.
That's a very interesting thing. The last thing you brought up, you know, it's not that they are very ideologically against each other. A lot of it seems to be maneuvering, at least on the outside, it seems to be maneuvering for the sake of political survival, right? People on either side of the aisle. So with that in mind, right, why should the people care? If the people who are fighting do not have ideological differences, then why are we fighting, Ihsan?
Well, I had that sort of philosophical dilemma about 2 days ago, and it persisted till now, and I will tell you why.
Yeah.
And that was because my good friend Nick Abdul sort of came out and dispelled rumors that he's switching side and so on. Well, that set me thinking, why were a lot of us, you know, like having some sort of problem with this current government? Well, within past, perhaps Nick Abdul is one of the most ardently theocratically minded politicians. So if, okay, fine, if you're against this government, primarily because there's past in it, but then Nick Abdul is switching side and apparently switching to the other side. Well, then what? Then is PAS becoming more moderate? And therefore, what's the point about, you know, like not accepting this government?
Right.
It's a bit confusing, right? Mm-hmm. And then you would go into coalition with Nick Abdul to form another government, is it? So sometimes it really sets you thinking, is it really the ideological differences, or is it simply a realignment of elite political interests where the people at large may or may not have a say? Typically not.
Something to certainly ponder upon. Now, UMNO's information department claims that all BN members of parliament will not support a no-confidence vote in parliament and will back Putrajaya's national recovery plan. Is this a standard reminder to focus on COVID-19, or is this an indirect remark to other UMNO MPs who are in Hishamuddin's camp to get in line with what the party as a whole is trying to do?
No, I think this is an opportunistic and convenient remark. And that is because, well, they would not get that motion of no confidence. I think in recent days or even weeks, a lot of people sort of obsessed with the idea of reopening parliament, albeit during the emergency. And a lot of people are thinking that the reopening of parliament is somewhat of a magic solution or panacea, as they say, to all these political wranglings and stalemate in the country. And well, let me be the one who you know, who come out and dispel this myth. Actually, to me, convening the parliament even during this emergency is actually harmless to Muhyiddin and his Bersatu. If we recall last year, parliament was sitting for many days, right? And there were various attempts to bring out these motions of no confidence against Muhyiddin. But, well, because the government of the day has the so-called procedural advantage, They control the agenda of parliament. So every single day, they could disallow such motion to be brought to the floor, to be debated, much less to be voted upon. Even if parliament is held nowadays, you would not see these motions being allowed to be brought to the floor for debate and vote. And some other people actually said, oh, but then there's budget, right? Budget is construed as a motion of no confidence, right?
Mm.
So as long as the government can push or can extend emergency beyond the 1st of August, let's say towards the end of the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
The government of the day, even if parliament is in session, because it's an emergency, they can actually directly promulgate this budget in the form of a so-called ordinance instead of going through parliament. Yes, all the MPs will make noise and so on, but hey.
Now, Nasri Aziz, MP Nasri Aziz, he also mentioned that the only reason he supported Anwar back in 2018, 2019, after UMNO lost the elections, Barisan Nasional lost the elections, was because back then he was worried that UMNO was going to get dissolved. According to him, that was Tun Dr. Mahathir's plan. He wanted to sort of dissolve UMNO altogether and then consolidate everything into Bersatu. But Nasri is now saying that, you know, that is off the table. Working with Anwar is off the table because he's confident that UMNO will never be dissolved. Is UMNO overconfident?
Well, just listening to that sort of explanation, it's mind-boggling, right? Mm-hmm. It's a challenge to your logical thinking. Number one, politicians may change their political allegiance, from one side to another, and sometimes back and so on. And of course, they will always make all sorts of excuses for their change of political stance. So we could listen with amusement to what he said, because number two, what is stopping the government of the day to deregister UMNO as well? I mean, I could not understand the logic that it could be deregistered back then, but not now. Did UMNO somehow acquire an immunity status?
So as we wrap up this conversation, Ehsan, what are the chances of elections happening this year? What have you heard from the ground? Because it's over the past few months we've heard, it will be this year, immediately after parliament reconvenes. Then after that, again, you will hear people saying, no, ceasefire until pandemic is resolved. And then after that, you will hear, going to be this year. And then someone will say it's going to be in 2023 when it automatically dissolves. And this week, again, we hear some rumblings from Bersatu that elections could be held at the end of the year. Have you heard anything?
I'm wondering what is Bersatu's game plan in this respect? Because if we were to go into an election anytime soon, I don't think it's anytime soon because of the pandemic and so on. How would Bersatu win a substantial number of seats? I think as is, it would have difficulty retaining even the number of seats that it is having now. Because, for example, those new Bersatu MPs who were brought in by Asmin and his friends, I think they would have a lot of difficulties retaining their seats because their seats are typically in the urban or suburban settings whereby the voters are perhaps not too thrilled that they voted for Asmin and company under the Pakatan ticket,
right.
But then they defected to the other side, right? So what would be Muhyiddin's game plan if he were to have an election within the next few months? So I can only think of, as what I suggested just now, somehow you would need to sort of break up UMNO, divide and rule UMNO, such that UMNO will have a change of leadership, and that change of leadership would be more amenable to working with Bersatu. Huh? Right. And I think that is, in a sense, going on, because there's a, as we discussed just now, there's a challenge to UMNO's elected party leadership. And if somebody somehow who is more amenable to working in Bersatu, perhaps on a cabinet cluster, is in charge of UMNO, well, then Bersatu and UMNO could indeed work as a team and win a lot of seats. Failing which, Bersatu coming up against UMNO, I think would have a tough time winning the, even a handful of seats. Yeah.
Mm. So what then do you think? Just to, I think a lot of us are curious, do you think elections this year, 2023, 2022, or as with everything in Malaysian politics, we'll wait and see?
Now, I'm assuming the emergency will not be extended till, let's say, 2023. Okay. And even that is not a very safe prediction. I'm just hoping. Mm-hmm. Well, in that case, election would have to be held by, let's say, the middle of 2023. But, well, if emergency could somehow be extended even till then, you could, in theory, even not have an election, even though the 5 years period of parliament is up. So it really depends, and as I said, this is a really powerful tool to use emergency to try to bypass a lot of political challenges.
All right. On that note, thanks so much for speaking with me today, Ehsan.
Thank you.
That was Oh Ehsan, senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, sharing his insights on the latest developments at UMNO and helping me make sense of the ongoing faction conflict that's going on in the party. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.